This Jocks 94.5 podcast is brought to you by Millennium Satellite and Video. Log on to msvnow.com. TV excellence everywhere. That's Millennium.
Three Man Front.
Hour number two of Three Man Front on this Tuesday. Pat Smith, Landrum Roberts, John Saber, Conrad Van Order with you until 12 noon. Then Matt McLaren will take you to 2 o'clock. Then from 2 to 6, you can hear the Paul Feinbaum Show right here on Jocks 94.5. We've got basketball tonight here on Jocks 94.5 as the Auburn Tigers visit College Station, Texas, taking on the Fightin' Aggies. That's a 6 o'clock tip-off. Pre-game show starts at 5:30 right here on Jocks. And then tomorrow night, you've got Alabama hosting the Florida Gators. So some good basketball coming up in the next 2 days.
Yeah, are you excited about pitchers and catchers reporting to
next
spring
week.
Training?
Next week. Week. You better believe it.
How much of that do you watch?
All of it.
Every bit of it?
Every bit of it.
So what can you take away from pitchers and catchers when they're there?
You get your daily updates and stuff that's going on. I mean, the biggest thing I look for is to make sure somebody doesn't have a sore arm. You know, you like to see that they've come into camp and, you know, they've actually had a throwing program. They're not picking up a ball for the first time when they get to spring training because all these people, you know, they take a few weeks off and they get back into it. So World Baseball Classic is going to take a lot of players off of different rosters. So it's going to be a little bit different. That's an opportunity for young guys in camp or guys that have, you know, 75 or 93 on their jersey to get an opportunity to play a lot. Because, prime example, the Cardinals, you've got the National League MVP. Goldschmidt is playing for Team USA. Nolan Arenado's playing for Team USA. Adam Wainwright's playing for Team USA. We got a couple other pitchers that's playing in the World Baseball Classic. So those are opportunities for young guys to be able to step in and to get some work.
How many guys do the Braves have on the World Baseball Classic roster? Because right now, it's just the list that I'm seeing, I'm not seeing a whole lot.
Well, I would assume because Acuna has been playing in the Caribbean series. So I would assume that Acuna.
Yeah, I'm out. No Braves players.
That's on Team USA.
Correct. So I'm out.
So you're not even going to watch Team USA?
There's no Braves players. I do see a lot of I see a lot of players from teams that I just really dislike.
Do you
see
a lot
Dodgers?
Of,
I see Phillies.
Do you not see current Braves play? Were they Braves at some point and then opted for more money?
Well, let's be honest. Most of these guys, at some point in their career, they were Braves.
So
either they were phenoms coming out of high school or college, and the Braves, because of their great scouting, were able to draft them and then gave them away at some point.
I just didn't realize that Landrum's going to be anti-USA for the World
Baseball
Classic.
I'm not
going to
be anti-USA. I'm not. But
you know, China does have a team, I believe, in the World Baseball Classic.
I will watch because Tim Anderson from Tuscaloosa and the White Sox, he is on that roster. So.
Oh, okay, there.
Yeah.
That's the one thing.
That's his connection.
The local flavor.
Right there.
Okay. Yeah. Unfortunately, flu season's here. You got to make your home healthier with Trane's Clean Effects. Home air cleaner moves up to 99.9% of airborne particles, including those that cause virus. It's 100 times more effective than standard air filters, 8 times more effective than HEPA room filters. Contact a Trane certified dealer for the Clean Effects air cleaner.
We're going to be joined by Rocco Miller coming up in just a minute. Final note on baseball. Get ready for the rule changes. And we'll touch on that when we get closer to the spring training games, because you've got bigger bases. You're obviously going to have a pitch clock, and the shift is now banned. So there are certain things.
Shift does not hurt my feelings.
So there's going to be some guys that probably going to have a little bit higher batting averages.
The lines there in the middle of the diamond, that's going to take some getting used to. That's just weird. I don't even know if we're ever going to get used to that. Will we? I mean, maybe it was. I didn't watch college basketball before the 3-point line. I don't remember watching college basketball before the 3-point line, but I guess the 3-point line, that was a little bit different for people watching. You know, the Euro lanes that aren't like or weren't like we had with the rectangle, as far as the paint area in basketball.
Yeah.
That's always a little bit different when you see something, but I don't know. The lines there on the field, have we taken it too far? With baseball.
Let's get ready. A lot of people's going to have to get used to it coming up in spring training.
The robo-umps, they're coming soon.
Yeah, right around the corner. So changes are coming. One thing's for sure, though, We still got great basketball, and this Amen. Is the favorite time of the year. And joining us now on the Bud Light Hotline is Rocco Miller, college hoops bracketologist, analyst, bracketeer.org. One of the best when it comes to nailing this information of who's going, where they're going to be seated, those things. And we're happy to be joined now on Three Man Front. Rocco, I hope you've had a really good basketball season so far.
It's been a fast one, as always. There's just so much going on every single day. Can't get enough of it, but it's also very difficult, even at my level, to keep up. You know, it takes not a lot of sleep being had these days, but that's why we love it.
Absolutely. All right, so the first question out of the gate. Alabama's having a special season. Only three losses on the year, and those three losses come to some powerhouse teams. When you look at this Alabama team from your standpoint, do you see them – perhaps even if they were to hit a slump here, maybe closer to the SEC basketball tournament, is there a potential for them not to be on that one line once we get to Selection Sunday?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I think right now them and Purdue are the two teams that are comfortably a number one line, but it's college basketball and things can change in a heartbeat, you know, any week, whether it's a large upset, a couple of tough losses. All of those things are constantly being measured. So right now, you know, Alabama does have cushion as well as Purdue. But like I said, it could quickly change. They're going to play road games at Tennessee. They're going to play Auburn in both places, obviously coming up. And then they're going to go to a Texas A&M team that's having a wonderful SEC campaign, only two losses for the Aggies. So I look at those three road trips as their toughest tests. But they also have tests at home with the other Auburn game, the Arkansas game coming up, and I think they'll get tested by Florida tomorrow. So out of the remaining eight games for the Tide, really kind of the only two that are layups on paper are the South Carolina road trip and the home Georgia game. So I do think the Tide need to probably win, you know, at least six of those eight. I think feel safe. Again, it always depends who it's against and where it happens, but yeah, there's still quite a bit of season left, and if you know, if they end up going 4-4, God forbid, you know, they might not even be a two seed, just depending on where the losses came from.
Rocco, when you look at the overall field, you've been covering college basketball and predicting the tournament there at the Bracketeer and Bracketeer.org. That's where you can find all of Rocco's stuff, and Rocco joins us on the Bud Light Hotline. But you look at the upper tier, when we think about some of the past teams that we've had, those elite teams, if we've labeled them, when you look at the field this year as it stands right now, where would you put this year and some of those upper tier teams in relation to past years as far as overall quality and level of eliteness, if you will?
Yeah, this year has been pretty different in a lot of those ways. I mean, typically by this time of year, you know, we might have four, five, six types of teams that are just a cut above the rest, or maybe it's just three. I think even though Purdue and Alabama, as I said, are the clear top two, you know, we saw Alabama lose by 20 plus against a team that's probably not going to the tournament at Oklahoma. At least they aren't right now. I think the dynamics of college basketball with the extra COVID year, with the sport just being so much older across the board, not just at the Power Five level, but also at a lot of the mid-major level. I know you're in Birmingham where this is the best Conference USA we've seen in over a decade, right there in UAB's backyard. And, yep. You know, that's just a really good example of what we're seeing across the sport. And I think it makes it very difficult to have dominant teams because we're in a day and age where if a kid's not getting the minutes he wants, a lot of those kids might find greener pasture at either a smaller school or a similar school in their same conference. And coaches are getting very savvy on how to build their rosters. You know, you need great guard play. You need a pick and pop guy like a big that can roll. You're seeing, you know, so many great big men across the country this year. But you're seeing that at a lot of different levels. So I think it sets up for a fascinating NCAA tournament. I can't tell you how many upsets they're going to be. I always hope for a lot, but, I think what it's going to provide is a lot of, tough to predict results as most of the season has gone.
All right. So let's talk about the SEC. So you've got Bama, you've got Tennessee, but after those two teams, you got an Auburn that's now out of the top 25, but still playing good basketball, still high up in the SEC standings, and a Kentucky. What teams in the SEC would, in your opinion, as of right now, would be on that bubble, so to speak, about potentially making it to the big dance?
Yeah, I think Kentucky's a great place to start just because Kentucky still has a lot of work to do. Right now, they would be in my first four in, which kind of sounds wild probably for Wildcat fans historically. But the fact of the matter is they just have the one great win at Tennessee. I think the home win against Texas A&M still matters quite a bit because Texas A&M's right on the fringe of the bubble. We'll talk about them in just a second. But I think as you go through some of the different measurements, you know, in the quadrant one measurement, again, this is just a way to filter results, but Kentucky just has that one win. They're 1-6 out of 7 tries. Even out of all their top 2 quadrant games, they had 11 tries and they're 5-6. So they start to improve as you go down, but then you get to the end of their resume and they have that ugly loss to South Carolina at Rupp Arena. One of the worst SEC teams we've seen in years. So that's something they have to overcome. But the schedule for Kentucky is still very much there for them to work their way pretty high up the board. If they can finish strong here in February, which they've done in previous years with Calipari. The Texas A&M Aggies, you know, they've been yo-yoing for me from last team in to one of the first teams out. Right now they're back on the outside after losing at Arkansas. But they've got a road win at Auburn, you know, and Texas A&M, I think it's impressive. I think it's something that the committee would discuss in their case, that Auburn's only home loss is to this team. It's a very difficult building to win in. It was the nation's longest winning streak when they did it. They also have a win against Missouri, who's a tournament team. So that gives them 2 wins in the top quadrant. But again, they had losses to Wofford, who's having a rough year out of the SoCon, and to Murray State, which falls in the third quadrant. So they have 2 bad losses they're trying to overcome, and they've got a mix of results where they're still under 500, much like Kentucky in the top 2 quadrants, despite a dominant conference record. So I think it's important for anybody, you know, maybe new to this process, to realize that conference record does not matter. It's your entire body of work. When we tip the ball off November 7th, it counts just the same as it will in March in terms of an evaluation. So every time a team takes the court, it's a piece of their story, and you have to add to that story, but it's just as equal as something that happened back in November.
Rocco Miller joining us. He is a part of Bracketeer. You can go to bracketeer.org and find the latest bracketology from Rocco, and he joins us on the Bud Light Hotline. All right, you're talking about Texas A&M. They're taking on Auburn at home tonight. This Auburn team, while, yes, you still got them as an 8, and every bracketology that I've looked at, either Auburn is an 8, a 9, in some cases as a 7, with the remaining schedule that they have, what is best-case scenario for Auburn? What is potentially worst-case for Bruce Pearl and the Tigers?
Tigers are extremely interesting because, and I do have them as the last 7, but they're right on that 7-8 border. And most of that has to do with other teams, not the Tigers themselves, because the Tigers have just been kind of coasting along. You know, I mentioned that home loss to A&M. They get a chance to revenge that tonight in College Station. But they're also getting a chance to play Alabama twice. If they get one of those wins, that dramatically gives them something different than the teams they're being compared against, like your even your Iowas and certainly your New Mexicos and your Florida Atlantics. They're not going to get the opportunity to play the number 2 team twice. So Auburn has their entire season right in front of them. They're also going to host Tennessee, which would be an elite win even on their home court. And they get a chance against Missouri at home, which is another tournament team, and they'll go to A&M, like we just talked about, plus go to Rupp Arena. So Auburn, for whatever reason, their schedule this year was completely backloaded. And, you know, we've been talking about this on other shows for weeks, that we're going to find all about Auburn in February, and I think that starts here this week.
In regards to Conference USA, you mentioned it. Andy Kennedy is a frequent guest on this program. The Blazers went through kind of a lull. They went to the Florida schools. They lost a close game to Florida Atlantic, to FIU, and then kind of had a tailspin. Jelly Walker was out for 5 games, but now they're on a 4-game win streak. And you mentioned Conference USA is better this year, but are we still looking at a one-bid league, and that being Florida Atlantic? Or if UAB were to upset Florida Atlantic, win the automatic bid, is there a way that FAU still could get in the big dance?
Yeah, I think so, definitely. And I was fortunate to be in Boca Raton the day they played the first time. So I got to see UAB firsthand. That was a great game. Came down to the last minute. The Owls ended up pulling that off. But of course, UAB has returned the favor and looked great doing it in the 9-point win on February 2nd last week. And I do think Florida Atlantic right now has just a little bit of room. You know, they're sitting here with just 2 losses. And again, they're playing in the 10th best league. usually Conference USA is somewhere around the, you know, 13 to 15th best league. So, that is helping a lot when you're playing your teams like Charlotte or Rice or Middle Tennessee, you know, the fat or the middle of the league. And, that they also have a road win at Florida. I think that's extremely important, because if Florida works their way back in the bubble, they're probably about the 10th team out right now. That's also going to help Florida Atlantic tremendously, especially, you know, in that event where Florida Atlantic could take another loss.
All right, Rocco, as we look at some of these teams, not necessarily teams that right now you and others have seeded maybe 1, 2, or 3, but you start looking at fives, you start looking at sixes, sevens, eights. That's been a number where we've seen teams that have been able to advance to the Final Four. Out of that collection, after, you know, the first 3, 4 seeds, what is maybe one of those teams, two of those teams that you say, hey, keep an eye on these guys? Because there is a potential for them to put it all together and make a run depending on matchup when it comes March.
Yeah, so we got to start with Creighton. Right now, Creighton's a 7 seed. They lost 6 in a row without their big man, Ryan Kalkbrenner, and he was out with mono. And if anybody's had mono, you know it knocks you, it can knock you out for up to a month. Pretty much what happened to him. So they took a bunch of tough losses that still matter. But they're going to end up getting seeded probably anywhere from 5th to 7th, even if they keep finishing strong. But when they've had him fully healthy, I think they've only been beaten once or twice, and they're blowing most teams out. I think Creighton's a team in the summer when they got Baylor Shireman in the transfer portal. Everybody nationally was hyping them up, and that's the team we've been seeing the last almost month now. I'm able to run a report on a website called Bart Torvik. It's an analytics site. If you do that for the last month, Creighton's the number 5 team in the country. And I fully expect them to keep performing that way should he stay healthy and should the whole team stay healthy. Injuries can change a lot of things in a hurry, as we all know. Another team I'll pull out is I really do like this Florida Atlantic team a lot. I mean, call me crazy, but I've been, you know, flying out to see them play. Watch most of their games, or I record all their games, and I just love the team that Dusty May has. It's a team that stayed together from last year, a very rare thing in college basketball this day and age, especially at the Conference USA level. I think they're a team to advance in March because they have two bigs that they can rotate. Vlad Golden, I think, is where most fans know him, the big 7-1 Russian player who is just a matchup problem. But they also have a thick big backing him up in Rosario, who's a tremendous player. And they have so many great ball dominant guards that can get you a bucket, and it makes it almost impossible for defenses and rotations to match up with. I think the Owls are built for a good run in the tournament. And then I think the obvious ones are North Carolina, who just doesn't have a great win yet. The same thing happened with them last year, so they're all the way down at the bubble level right now. And of course Kentucky, because the talent level, you know, if those teams just turn it on late, it's a brutal matchup to see North Carolina with an 8 next to them or Kentucky with a 10 next to them, and we might end up having that. So I think those would be 4 good ones to keep in mind.
As far as conferences from top to bottom, in regards to you, the eye test, forget about the analytics, but based on the basketball that you've seen this year, is it Big 12 or Big 10 when it comes to total conference, top to bottom, best conference in basketball this year?
Yeah, I think the Big 12 has made that decision pretty easy this year because, in one sense, from a math standpoint, only having 10 teams helps, and they don't really have a bad team. I know Texas Tech's only won the 1 game in league, but they had a pretty good non-conference. They're still measuring out as like a top 50 team in all their other results. And everybody else in the league is super competitive. Oklahoma's what, like 8th place maybe, and blew out Alabama, the number 2 team in the country. That just goes to show you that night in and night out, it's a war in that league. They have the chance to do something unprecedented, and that would be put 6 teams into the top 16, which is where they've been the last couple weeks in my bracket forecast. I don't think we've ever seen that. The most I've ever seen was the Big 12 about 3 years ago had 5 of the top 16. And so just the fact that they have 6 that dominant teams, plus you might get a 7th or 8th with West Virginia and Oklahoma State, just shows, you know, there are no nights off in the Big 12.
I know you're based out of San Francisco, and I know you travel all around the country watching these games, but I have to ask you about St. Mary's, because what they did to Gonzaga the other night, Gonzaga came to Birmingham and took care of Alabama pretty easily. In regards to that conference, do you think St. Mary's could be a team that could make a run?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I've liked this program, you know, for years. And, you know, I think they're getting smarter and smarter in the way they play and, you know, use the big effectively. They play outstanding defense. I think Logan Johnson's been there 5 years now. He's the best on-ball defender in the WCC, one of the best on-ball defenders in the country. So that gives them a lot that they can take away from other teams. They're also incredibly prepared. I have the opportunity to meet with their staff on a regular basis, and we text all the time. And these guys are up like till 4 a.m. putting their game plans together, even when they're playing teams in the middle of the pack in their league. And that's why I think you see their numbers extremely high in things like KenPom in the net. It's because when they go out and they'll play like a San Diego or a Loyola Marymount or a team in the middle of the pack of the league, they'll not just beat them. They'll beat them by 20-plus almost on a regular basis because they're just such a difficult matchup, and they're just over-prepared. They know what each player's strength and weaknesses is on each of the opponent's teams. That sounds like something every program should know, but I think their attention to detail really shows, because they're certainly not the most athletic or talented team, but they have a great collection of players and a very high IQ basketball team, and they're a team-first team, and that's what makes them a lot of fun to watch and cover.
One of the best at what he does, he is Rocco Miller. You can find his website. It's very informative, bracketeer.org. That's bracketeer.org. Rocco, great stuff. Thanks for coming back on with us this year. Hopefully we'll talk to you soon as these conference tournaments heat up, and then eventually we will get to March, and that is where your expertise is absolutely needed, especially by these two guys that will try to competitively fill out brackets and win money.
Yes.
Anytime, gentlemen. Always a pleasure. I appreciate you having me.
Thanks, Rocco. Appreciate it. Joining us on the Bud Light Hotline, carefully brewed with a clean, crisp taste. When there's fun, Bud Light is there.
A lot of bad out there. We will address some of it, and one of them involves, well, Tom Brady, kind of. We'll do it next in The Worst Thing I've Seen.
The countdown is on for the 2024 NFL Draft, presented by Bud Light, live from Detroit, and you can attend in person for free.
Welcome to the NFL Draft.
See the next NFL stars and experience the ultimate NFL fan festival, featuring live concerts, interactive games, player autographs, and more. The NFL Draft, presented by Bud Light, April 25th through 27th. Visit NFL.com/draft access to register for free entry today.
Our house is a mess. Come on in.
I'm Amber Wallen, internet comedian and host of your new favorite podcast, Fly on the Wallen.
Okay, that's pretty presumptuous to assume that this is going to be their favorite podcast, by the way.
Anyway, that wasp that you just heard interrupt me is my husband.
And co-host, Benjamin Wallen.
Listen in as we discuss relationships and keeping our sweet baby kid alive.
Fly on the Wallen, wherever you listen.
This is Three Man Front.
Name that group, Landrum.
I'll be nice. It's a name and a something.
That would
like
be
Huey Lewis and the News.
Right.
It's a name and the something.
And she's got the same name.
Correct.
That is Gloria Estefan in the Miami Sound Machine. I don't know. I was trying to think of names in the group.
I just
behind
gave you
the
a hint.
The same something.
The
right,
same
correct,
name.
Right. Yeah. Like Duran Duran.
Or New York, New York.
Yeah. Or
who
Tony Tony.
Who is it?
This is Lisa Lisa and the
and
Cult Jam.
The Cult Jam.
Nice! Oh, I don't think I've ever heard this song before.
Played it multiple times, but okay.
Well, it's hearing it.
What made you play that?
Hearing it.
I'm just curious. What went into the line of thinking of playing
it? I felt in an 80s mood.
Okay.
Because I think the next one is actually, well, I'll say 80s. This is, I think, late 80s, early 90s. I think the next one's
but
the 90s.
Lisa, Lisa,
as well.
Now that was right smack dab when I was in high school.
Yeah.
Totally off the subject, but that's okay. Have you guys ever seen the movie Room? Came out in 2015.
Room? With,
yeah.
Or The Room?
Or the
The difference.
Room.
Which, the, with Brie Larson?
Yeah, the girl
the
from 21 Jump Street. Yes.
Okay, then yes. That's a totally different movie than The Room.
Okay. Yes, that one. The
yes.
With her and the kid.
Yes.
Saw that the other night.
Okay.
It's actually pretty good. Pretty good flick.
Okay, completely out of left field. Okay.
Yeah, it was.
It's a bit sad and somber. They've been stuck in a room for quite some time.
But I did have somebody that was listening to the show yesterday, and you asked about The Menu, and they watched The Menu last night.
Mm-hmm.
And
they like it?
They texted me this morning and said it was great. So they really enjoyed it.
They liked the twist.
Yes, they did like the twist.
I mean, the twist didn't wait till the very end, but...
No, but it was and I think it was throwing shade on... I think a certain aspect of the culinary community that takes themselves too seriously.
Yeah, the person that wrote the script for the movie got the idea of visiting a Norwegian restaurant in which they basically, you know, had the chef would come out and make a big production out of everything.
Right. And to be honest, while that would be a once-in-a-lifetime experience, A, I'm not paying that kind of money. But B, that just seems like you got to invest a lot, not monetarily, just invest a lot to go and have that kind of experience.
$1,250, right? That's what they said in the movie.
Yeah, per person. Whatever course meal. But yeah, the menu, it's out, and if you want to watch it, it's on the HBO Max, right?
That is correct.
Yeah, so if you want to watch that, you can certainly do it. If you want to get into lunch right now, you talk about food and a place that does not do the frou-frou. We talk about our friends Taylor and Dave all the time at Soho Social, also at Soho Standard, and now Social Taco. Get in for lunch today at Social Taco. By the way, the salsa is free. You don't have to pay for chips and salsa, but you want to go with, well, I'll just tell you, it's a Mexican pizza. They have several different varieties. Of course, the tacos. You can go with several entree options as well. My favorite is the huevos rancheros. Great starters. The frozen margaritas. And don't forget about the soft serve ice cream. You got to get that. They have the house-made churros as well. It is Social Taco. Social Taco right there in the square. Open today. Get in and see them. Before we do Pat Ponders, fortunately, we have to take you down this road. And this is the worst thing that I've seen.
This is the worst thing I've seen.
Been in quarantine, and like I need to get out and party. Woo! What's better than beach and a few drinks and Jeeps? Man, can't get any better than that. Law enforcement has definitely made their visibility and made people chill out and not be as crazy. The cops are doing their job as long as they don't be mean to people who are actually being innocent. Then I'm all gravy, baby.
All right, the reason you're getting this story, partly because I blame you, Pat Smith, because you said it, you brought it up on the show, you asked about a particular type of story that we see and usually, let's just be honest,
you're infatuated with shark death.
Right, yeah, we're waiting for this moment.
Yeah, I mean, it's something that we all have talked about in the office. We've talked about calling your wife and having a long discussion.
I am fascinated with sharks.
And shark death.
Well, that goes along with it, and not making light of any of this.
Goes along with it. There you go.
But unfortunately, we do have a shark attack that has resulted in a death, and it happened down under.
Well, you predicted it yesterday.
Yeah, this not even 24 hours old.
I told you. It happens more than you think. A teenage girl in Western Australia was killed in a rare shark attack on Saturday. It was rare because it was in the Swan River there in Perth.
In a river.
Mm-hmm. Stella Berry, 16, was jet skiing with friends. She jumped in the water to swim with a pod of dolphins.
Oops. It was not dolphins you were swimming with.
Well, this is coming from Police Acting Inspector Paul Robinson, and he said, quote, there was possibly a pod of dolphins seen nearby, and the young female jumped into the water to swim nearby the dolphins. Unfortunately, authorities were called to the scene just before 4 p.m., near a traffic bridge where she was pulled from the water, and critical injuries eventually led to her death because of massive blood loss. Dying there at the scene, it was the first fatal shark attack on the river in 100 years. Now, was there a pod of dolphins? That remains to be seen, but they could not identify, just based on the bite marks and everything else, what type of shark, but they're guessing it was a bull shark. Now, bull sharks have been known to... And I don't know about the Swan River there in Perth, but they have been known to migrate from saltwater to freshwater. They can actually do that. So anyways, yeah, unfortunately. Back in 2021, a bull shark attacked a local man in his 50s in the same river. He did not die. And bull sharks can be, it says, occasionally aggressive. I just consider them always aggressive. But that is one of the worst things that I've seen. And then we go back to Veronica Rogic. You're talking about Tom Brady?
Sharks and Tom Brady's girlfriend, man.
Completely on brand.
Well, apparently people are taking shots at her, the former Victoria's Secret model, and her body, saying she is too skinny. Now, it has been reported she's an admirer of Tom Brady. She's not being called girlfriend anymore because apparently she's married. Still married to Victor, the former bobsledding guy.
From Austria, right?
Somewhere, yeah. Sure. But the latest pictures of her, people saying she's too skinny.
Pictures. Okay.
And she's taking offense and then drawing comparisons with her and Giselle. And she said, I respect Giselle, but we are not the same people. I am my own person. All of that good stuff. But she gets into her body and she says, I'm 5'11", 125 pounds. And she said, yes, it is true. I only eat 5 or 6 meals all year long. And she says, not because I'm on a special diet. Because I don't like the taste of other food. I don't like fish. I don't like seafood. I don't like oysters. I don't eat a lot of meat. People who know me, and they're my friends, they know I'm running on the sugar.
Hmm. Seems healthy.
We're talking about models here. Booger sugar? What kind of sugar is she talking about? I don't know. Hmm. I mean, that was the old joke, cocaine and cigarettes.
Did we have to bring up the model because you got blindsided yesterday with the Tom Brady stuff, and now you're having to overcorrect?
Maybe that is what it is.
Just wondering. Okay.
But she says she only eats 5 or 6 meals all year long. You find that surprising?
I mean, she looks like a healthy young woman.
Correct, yeah. 5'11", and what'd you say, 97 pounds?
125 is what she claims. But anyways.
You're fixated on that one picture of her in that canary yellow bikini.
Mm. No, I'm not fixating on the bikini. I do not even have, Pat, seriously, don't say that because she'll believe it. I'm sitting here reading the rest of the story. Come on. Don't do that to me.
Didn't you say there were 3 pictures in here and so you were,
scrolling right past them. I'm just talking about the 5 or 6 meals that she's claiming that she eats a year. That's what really.
All right, go back to the top though. Right to the top.
Of the page, not
of the page.
Her.
Okay.
Yeah, come on, man.
Okay.
Yeah, what's the caption underneath the first picture of her?
Underneath this picture?
That's correct.
It says Veronica Rajek at Orchid Beach House in Tulum.
Tulum?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Not familiar with Tulum.
I've been to Tulum. It's the ruins there in Mexico.
Correct.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Hmm. You've been there?
I've been there.
Okay.
So have I, yeah.
Actually, had a vendor that sold fruit that had that little spicy whatever that you have over there that they put on fruit.
Were you dressed
like a barbecue?
Were you
dust.
Dressed like that at Tulum?
No, I was. I told you the story. I was like 11, 12 years old, but I did convince my dad.
Oh yeah, that was where the nude beach was.
Yeah, well, it was Topless Beach, and I convinced my dad.
Oh, there we go.
Yeah, right.
To take me down there, and then I pretended to take pictures of. Well, I took a lot of pictures of his left shoulder. It was anyway, long story. Yes.
Well, so when,
hormones
so,
were kicking
all right,
in.
So let me ask you a question.
Okay. Now we understand the picture scrolling. We that's where it started at 11. Okay.
So were these back in the days when you would like, you know, get your film developed at Eckerd or, you know,
something
like that?
This you was would go down to the Big B Drugs.
This was the Fun Saver camera, yes.
Mm, and someone would be developing these pictures and think, oh, okay.
Look at this old 11-year-old in Mexico. Yeah. Man, he had a great trip. Look at this.
I know that Big Brother's always watching now, but for people who used to take those type of pictures, when you would go in, would you get someone else to pick up your pictures?
I would never take those pictures, Landrum, so yeah, I really can't.
I wasn't specifically saying you. I'm saying people that you know because that's your
era. I don't
era.
Know anybody that did that.
Of the three
that.
Of us here, you're the only one that have taken topless photos.
Is that when the Polaroid got popular? It was like, I know, we're going to develop them right here. Just hold them up to the light and shake it.
Which is actually bad for
you're talking about the picture.
Is it bad for it?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. I don't know. Anyways, Veronica is upset with comparisons after the.
Well, I can just say this. I mean, based on those pictures that you have on your monitor,
they're not on my monitor.
I would say that she is
not on my monitor.
I would say that I would probably be, if you had to choose between the two.
Correct.
Based on the photographic evidence
that Landrum has,
I
do not have it.
I would say that it was most definitely this young woman would probably be the leader in the clubhouse. You
just
agree
based
or disagree?
Off photographic evidence or the evidence that Landrum presented about her and her choices and
no, lifestyle. I'm not worried about. I'm not talking about that. I'm just talking about just
tail of the tape.
Yes, the visual evidence that my partner had on his computer screen for about 20 minutes.
You're going to call her, and you're going to explain all of this after the show. This is horse. I mean, you have no idea what you're doing to me right now. No idea.
Is this a bunch of bull shark?
It is a bunch of bull shark.
Okay. I'm going to come clean. It wasn't 20 minutes. It was 14.
You're so full
It was
crap.
14 minutes. I've had my iPhone locked.
You've been around Pat enough, and you listen to the show enough, you know that he's full of crap.
If anything, she should be mad that you called Pat honey. Well, that was reserved for her. But okay.
No, he doesn't have it up on the screen. He's got her Twitter page pulled up on the screen now.
Landrum has figured out incognito on Chrome, and yeah. What are you talking about? Look at my search history. It's not there.
Oh.
Private viewing history.
Moral of the story today, be careful where you swim. That is it.
More ways than one.
That is the worst thing that I've seen. Pat Ponders comes your way next. I love you, honey.
Our house is a mess. Come on in. I'm Amber Wallen, internet comedian and host of your new favorite podcast, Fly on the Wallen.
Okay, that's pretty presumptuous to assume that this is going to be their favorite podcast, by the way.
Anyway, that wasp that you just heard interrupt me is my husband.
And co-host, Benjamin Wallen.
Listen in as we discuss relationships and keeping our sweet baby kid alive.
Fly on the Wallen, wherever you listen.
This is Three Man Front.
Oh, great song coming back. You know this one, don't you?
See, I've played it before and he's sung it before. He doesn't know this. Yeah. He's in more trouble than at home.
You know it? You going to sing it for us?
Is he afraid to speak?
Try to sing it. Hang on.
Me and Romeo. Yeah.
Hey, Prince.
Prince who?
It's just Prince.
Oh, I mean, his name is Prince Rogers Nelson, but.
No. The artist, at one time, formerly known as Prince.
Time and time again.
He's not singing this song.
Oh, he's trying to look it up.
Yeah. Google slow
on
this one.
I'm actually not. No, I'm completely done with the internet for the day, by the way.
Correct, yes.
Levert, that's correct.
Because of the brothers Gerald and... begin with the C, I can't remember the other brother's name.
No, okay.
I've got a little football news for you. So Kevin Steele hasn't been officially named as the new defensive coordinator at Alabama. So I guess he is coming because Tulane defensive coordinator Lance Guidry is now the new DC at Miami.
Oh.
Tulane had the 77th best defense in America last year. He's going to Miami, who had the 67th best defense. So.
Yeah, Mario, not what I expected in year one. That's for sure. I thought that they could possibly, be one of those teams finish 9-3, but. I don't know. I think that thing in Miami and what he's trying to do, and I think Mario's a good coach and he knows what he's doing, but, and especially going from Oregon to what he did there to going to Miami and playing in the ACC when you thought, well, this is going to be teed up for him perfectly.
Well, the amount of money that's being invested in that program right now via NIL, if he doesn't get this thing going in a year or two, don't be surprised if they go ahead and punt that and move along.
Yeah, for sure. Well, we got five questions from Pat. This is what we call Pat Ponders.
I want to know what you're thinking. Tell me what's on your mind.
It's time for Pat Ponders.
And as always, it's brought to us by friends at Alabama Roofing Professionals. Call Mike, or just call Alabama Roofing Professionals. One of their experienced people that deal with roofs every single day. And they deal with people like me, like Pat, like Cole Kublik, and like you. Get the free roof inspection. No hidden print, no fine print. You can get it done. They're going to warranty anything they do on your roof, whether it's repairing it or replacing it. Alabama Roofing Professionals, 205-722-ROOF or alroofpros.com.
Yeah, I just want to throw in one other thing about Alabama Roofing Professionals. They will be the people that will discuss, handle the paperwork and things like that when it comes to your insurance companies. Because
yep.
That's what happened with mine. It was flawless. Mike and the guys, they just do a fantastic job at Alabama Roofing Professionals. All right, question number one. So Vegas just came out a few minutes ago. We've been talking about Tom Brady. So they've got these odds out, and I'm going to read these odds to you about what's going to happen first to Tom Brady. And if you guys had to make a wager on one of these choices, which one would you take? Here are the options that betonline.ag is giving you. What will happen first to Tom Brady? Tom Brady unretires. Tom Brady gets back with Giselle. Tom Brady gets engaged. Tom Brady gets someone pregnant. Or Tom Brady fights Sam Bankman-Fried, who is, of course, under investigation right now, from FTX. That is a plus 7,500 bet, by the way. So which one, if you had to, which one would you lay a little dinero on that most likely to happen of those that I just mentioned?
Mm. Okay, I don't think Tom's unretiring. Know that he wants to really dive into being a football analyst and being the best at his craft. So, and I believe he's going to take that very seriously. But still, he's going to have some downtime. This sounds awful. I don't think he's getting back with Giselle. That ship has sailed. But I think one of these options that Vegas has might lead to the other. So I will say ultimately for the value pick, I will go Tom Brady gets someone pregnant, and then as a result, he gets engaged.
Okay, so you're going plus 1,000, Tom Brady gets someone pregnant.
Yes, because these are our choices.
Well, that's what I said. I mean, you had to choose one of these. You're going to go Tom Brady gets someone pregnant.
Yes.
Plus 1,000.
Plus 1,000.
Okay. John, which one do you like?
The two best options are either he gets someone pregnant or gets back with Giselle. Because as much as he's going to throw himself into this analyst life, that ain't starting until 24. Now,
so he's got a little time.
So he's not doing it, obviously, this season, but that doesn't mean he can't be in the postseason for next season. Because he said on Colin Cowherd's show that he wouldn't start until 24. So he could start January of 24 and maybe be like the postseason analyst at Fox or wherever. So maybe even call a game then, a playoff game. So even that being said, that's still a good year away. So with him basically having nothing to do besides take pictures in his underwear that Landrum enjoyed looking at yesterday, I feel like it's getting someone pregnant.
Okay, so you and Landrum both.
But that feels like more of a long shot. Just because I saw that yesterday, by the way.
Oh. But because that feels like more of a long shot, I'll go that he gets back with Giselle because I think he's gonna get tired of pulling the DiCaprio and going for the barely underage girls and then like realize, oh, you know what, there's actually, you know, I had something actually really good when he realizes, maybe football wasn't all that much, and then probably go back.
That being the case, where's the option for Tom Brady goes to prison? He said the barely underage girls. You're talking about for his age.
If DiCaprio can do it, why can't he?
Huh?
We're talking about legal girls. We're just saying underneath his age.
What is your guess, Pat? You're a gambler.
Of these, I would probably have to take the he's going to get someone pregnant plus 1,000. So I agree with you guys. So it's not going to be. He's not going to unretire. He's not getting back with Giselle.
And by fight, Bankman-Fried, do you mean like in a Jake Paul thing, or he just goes up and like scuffles with him?
No, I think he just goes up and just cold cocks
and
him.
Gets in it. Okay. All
yeah. Right. Cause apparently that was one of the reasons why Giselle kicked
right,
him.
Yeah.
The
I mean, they put apparently all their money into that.
Yeah.
And that funny money.
Yeah. So thought it was interesting. All right. So let's stay on the Tom Brady topic for a second. So sand from the beach where Tom Brady retired has now been listed on eBay for over $100,000. That's right. The sand where he made the video where he retired. So it made me ponder. So when Nick Saban decides to call it quits, will someone try to sell water from Saban's lake house at Lake Burton and put it on eBay? Yes or no?
No. I don't think so. But
it wouldn't have the same effect? The greatest of all time, the college football coach?
It's not going to be that. It'll be someone will claim it'll be his Dasani or Coke bottle.
Yeah.
It'll be like a whole bunch of those listings up there. Someone just grab a Coke out of the vending machine.
Half-eaten little Debbie. There. Probably try to get away with that. Or a half of a cup of stale cold coffee. Well, what would something... I'm just trying to think.
His straw hat.
Yeah.
You know, he left one at LSU. And Michael Bonnet, who is the SID at LSU, he still has it. Matter of fact, I think he gave it to his son. Because Saban left it in his office when he left to go to the Dolphins. That might be something, a leftover hat.
Maybe Dodge Charger keys? Last one he gave out?
What do all these keys go to? Well, that was I'm just kidding.
All right, question number three. Two Tennessee state legislators, Senator London Lamar, Democrat from Memphis, Representative Joe Towns Jr., Democrat from Memphis, introduced language that would replace the volunteer state's Columbus Day holiday with a new holiday being the first Monday after the Super Bowl. That's right. So the state of Tennessee is thinking about making the Monday after the Super Bowl a state holiday. The holiday proposed by Tennessee House Bill 1463 and Senate Bill 1344 would be formally named Super Bowl Monday. So my question is, should the state of Alabama consider doing the same?
Yes. Day after the Super Bowl, day after the national championship most years, that's pretty brutal as well. But day after the Super Bowl, yeah. Because Columbus Day, I don't know where you guys are on Columbus, but I don't consider him the guy that discovered North America. I don't.
Can't really discover it when people are already there.
Yeah, exactly. Right? But he
I'm
gets
not disagreeing.
No, everybody wants to give him that title.
So do away.
Number one, this is brilliant by the senator and the House of Representatives guy.
Yeah,
is that right? Up in Tennessee, this
state
is brilliant.
Legislators.
Number one, you're going to get reelected. Just for bringing this up, I don't know if it's going to pass or not, but I think it's a great idea. And yes, I think the state of Alabama should adopt something similar, whether it's the day after the Super Bowl or potentially the day after a national championship game, because there is a good chance that Alabama will be in it.
Should the state of Alabama do it? Yeah, probably. It would be nice to see and have, although we'd be working, so it doesn't really matter much for us.
We're thinking about all of you.
That being said, if the NFL was smart, what they should do, and I think it would be a win-win all around, because President's Day is the very next Monday. Now, the way the schedule is and everything is set up now, President's Day is a week after when the Super Bowl falls and when everyone pretty much has that day off already. So why not? You extended the season by additional game, but you still only have one bye. Why not give the players an additional bye? That way their bodies can heal up and, you know, actually kind of compete a little bit better in this gladiator sport that they're playing. You extend the season by one additional week, and then all of a sudden, that Monday after is on President's Day and everyone's already off.
Yeah, that would be smart. And if the NFL's looking at adding one more game, because they keep talking about adding just one more regular season game, then that could fall right into President's Day.
Yeah, if you add the game, then I still think that's much. But even still, if that's too much, then okay, take off another preseason game. You can add a game, take off preseason, add in a bye week or something. Mm-hmm. There are ways to do it to where Super Bowl Sunday is the day before President's Day.
So the state of Tennessee, looking ahead, being proactive, looking to get rid of the wonderful holiday.
Will the Titans ever play in another Super Bowl?
Who knows?
But if you're a not person in that state and you don't have to go to work, you really don't care, probably.
Not with Tannehill quarterback.
No, that's not going to happen. I appreciate all of you for listening today. And the Jocks text line, it's always open. Jamie from Hayden actually says, I'm not ruling it out with Nick getting it done. He said, you see the look on Coach Saban's face when Pollock said Georgia ruled college football now. Coach has got to be fuming.
What
about drywall from a hole that maybe Saban punched through his office wall? You could sell that.
This is Three Man Front on Jax 94.5.
You met Lala Kent on Vanderpump Rules. Now Lala and her friends share everything on Give Them Lala.
I'm expecting my second child. Which is very, very amazing.
Congratulations.
To say. Feels
We're
that
all
way.
With child.
You can say she's pregnant, she's knocked up, anything except with child.
Oh, I love with child. I'm going to be saying it all the time.
Yep.
Excuse
yes,
me.
Yes, yes.
6 feet, I'm with child.
Watch what Lala is talking about on YouTube or search for Give Them Lala wherever you listen.